Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowell, and I'm here with my co-host, Jack Korsnowski.
Ahoy there, folks.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Ahoy, and ahoy.
How? Got any ZZ Top fans in the audience?
Oh, is that ZZ Top?
Yep. I don't remember which song, but ZZ Top. Yeah.
I know ZZ Top is a band, and I think like there's an episode of King of the Hill where it's revealed that the main singer of ZZ Top is Hank Hill's cousin.
Okay.
Which I think it jumped that show jumped the shark a little bit right there, but they made it a pretty funny episode.
I know I've heard that phrase before, but I don't remember what it means.
Jump the shark?
Yes.
So it's a reference to a Happy Days episode. And there was an episode where like the Fonz did some stunt where he was like water skiing and he jumped over a shark in like maybe a tank or something. I don't know if it was water skiing. He did some sort of stunt where it was like a jump over like a tank with a shark in it or something along those lines. I've never seen the episode, and people just thought that was over the top. It was ridiculous. It made the show unrelatable. And you know, it the show had just gone too far. And so that's what jumping the shark means, is like, it takes a show. It's usually, it takes something to like, now it's just too ridiculous.
Gotcha.
I'm trying to think of other examples. I use it in the King of the Hill episode with ZZ Top. Like, come on, that wouldn't happen. It makes it feel like it. What's the word? It shatters your suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Where yeah. Okay, like I could believe the show before, but now I can't.
Which is interesting, right? Because every show we realize is a fabrication. And yet there's some level of plausibility that we're willing to grant. And I think it can sometimes be a blurry line of where you actually go too far to the point where people are like, nah, that's not believable. Even though the whole thing is fabricated, right?
I have an example of this. I'm going through CSI right now, one of my favorite TV shows, and it's 15 seasons long. But it's like, once you start getting past like season five is when it starts to jump the shark, in the sense of like seasons one through five, most of the episodes are, there's a crime, they have to solve it. It's a tricky one, but they get the bad guy, you know, mm-hmm. and that's it. But then in the later episodes, things start happening. Like this individual CSIs get kidnapped. You know, one of the CSI's daughters turns out to be a serial killer. Like all of these things, like, okay, this is obviously over dramatized. Like if seasons one through five, it's like you can go to any like, you know, major city, their crime scene investigation unit, and it's like, I could see this happening. Like I could see this being an actual forensic team's experience. But then in the later seasons, like, okay, no, like I don't believe this anymore.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think a lot of episodic shows suffer from that type of change because I'm trying to think of a good example. I feel like Dexter was a show that kind of got that way, even though in and of itself it's not super believable. But like at the last few seasons kind of just went off the rails. Maybe it wasn't. Unbelievable. It was just they lost some of their storylines and some of their actors. But the other one that came to mind was Smallville comes to mind. I think that got stale. But I think that's one of the drivers. So there are shows that after a period of time, they feel like they're just repeating the same thing over and over again. They have a template. And they get to a point where I don't know if it's declining ratings or fear of declining ratings, but they reach this point where they're like, oh, we got to do something different. And then I feel like that's where the temptation comes in to escalate or to introduce these like harebrained, approaches. And I don't know. It seems like it just ruins a lot of good shows that way.
I know that Seinfeld, like Jerry Seinfeld decided to cancel the show because he felt like it was getting to that point. And he was like, I'd rather end the show now than continue and have the show really deteriorate. So if you ever hear the phrase they pulled a Seinfeld, that's what it means. It means like you're recognizing that the show or whatever it is you're working on is, you know, it's fulfilled its purpose. It's been as good as it's going to get. It's only going to go downhill from now. Let's quit while we're ahead rather than suffer this. Well, it used to be good. Now it's just crap. I mean, I think I haven't seen any new Simpsons episodes for like the last 15, 20 years. But I think that's an example where people say like they should have pulled a Seinfeld. Because I think that the more recent, and same thing with South Park. I haven't seen too many of their newer stuff over the last, I don't know, 10 years, but nah, maybe the last 7 or 8 years. But I think the consensus is like South Park used to be every episode or most episodes were timeless. Like the World of Warcraft episode, the Scientology episode, all the Mr. Hinky stuff. Like a lot of their classic episodes are they're timeless where you can watch them at any point in, you know, recent history and still get a laugh. Whereas a lot of the recent stuff over the last 10 years or so has been very timely. So it's really the episodes are funny the week that they come out. But if you were to go back and watch an episode from like 2018 today, it would feel so out of date.
See, I would argue the opposite, actually, where I've seen a transition from in the very there. Well, let's set this up correctly. So South Park's approach has always been to write and animate and voice the episode in a single week and the week that it airs. So there's no prep, there's no lead time. It's just hot off the presses, whatever you can think of that's funny that week. And so I think that gave them the ability to respond very rapidly to what was happening in the world. So it's like if there was big news breaking, you could see an episode about it in South Park the following week. To some extent, I think like what SNL has done, where it's very responsive to what's happening in the culture and politics. Having said that, what I've noticed over the past, I'll say 5+ seasons of South Park is that they've moved away from standalone episodes that have their own payoff, to episodes that are like mini series almost. So like it'll be a storyline that lasts, 3 or 4 episodes or a whole season. And before, where characters like Mr. Hankey would pop up from time to time, and so it was kind of a running gag, but it was never actually like a plot line. Now you've got storylines like, oh, what's his face? Randy Marsh starting his weed farm, Integrity Weed. And it's just like his running thing is like how he's managing his pot farm. And then Towley shows up and becomes his business partner. And so,
Towley is a business partner.
yeah.
Oh, man.
So there's just, yeah, it's, I think, become more predictable because they keep a story arc across multiple episodes. So it's not, you don't have that novelty or that like clean slate every single week. Even though they're still creating the episodes new that week, it's like they're carrying over an arc from previous weeks. And I think that has undermined the sharpness of the humor, I guess I would say.
Could dig that. I haven't noticed that in the episodes I've seen just because I haven't seen, what'd you say, like the last 5 years or so? I haven't seen any new South Park episodes in that period. I remember what, because I haven't had cable since I moved to Iowa in 2016. So I only had seen South Park up until that point, really. And that was during the period where they had like the member berries and where they were had the stuff with like, you know, the presidential election. That's when PC Principal came on. So
yeah.
just a lot of very timely episodes, and which at the time it's like, yeah, this is funny, but then like even like just a few months later you see one of those episodes again. It's just like, oh, like it's so preachy.
Yeah, and I wonder, now that you mention it, I wonder if that kind of like 2015, 2016 became like the death of comedy, because it did seem like that was when a lot of the stand-up comedians who were touring started complaining about like getting shouted down or having their events canceled on college campuses and stuff like that. And I think I started noticing the quality of SNL deteriorating at the same time, where it seemed like what was happening in the public sphere with any politician, take your pick, was so ludicrous and stupid that it was like you couldn't top it with humor. Like real life was more ridiculous than anything the shows could contrive. And so at best, they came up with like, they became almost news because they were just matching the absurdity of real life instead of surpassing it, you know?
Yeah. Which is a bit but scary to think about.
Yeah, that's true.
I but just watch nothing... South Park episodes like Man Bear Pig. Like you can just sit down and watch the Man Bear Pig episode at any time, and it's absolutely hilarious, and it's not preachy, it's not timely, it's never going to go out of date. It's just Al Gore trying to hunt down the Man Bear Pig. Half man, half bear, half pig.
Half pig.
Half pig. Come on, guys, it's super cereal. Guys, I think we should really go hang out with Weird Al. Or not Weird Al, Al Gore. No, man, he's weird. Yeah, but come on, guys. I don't think he has any friends. They're just so, they feel so bad for him. And they're so creeped out by him. It's so funny.
Or the episode where they go to Casa Bonita and Cartman eats all the skin off the fried chicken.
Ugh.
Or when they're waiting in line for, like, is it iPads, I think? And his mom... Cartman's mom is going to buy him like the knockoff version, and then he goes on this epic rant at Best Buy. Which I will not repeat here, no. But it's pretty, pretty hysterical. Wow, what sparked that conversation?
I can't remember. I mentioned the phrase jump the shark.
Oh, yeah. So coming back to that, what I was going to ask is, does that phrase only apply to shows that intended to have some level of believability from the get-go? Because I feel like South Park or Family Guy or Always Sunny like can't really do that because they always have been unbelievable from the start, essentially.
Well, I see.
Surreal.
I think It's Always Sunny can definitely jump the shark, and it feels like in the latter seasons they have. It's just because it just seems like the hijinks they're getting into are so over the top. It just kind of blows away the relatability and the believability. You know, like the earlier episodes, like the one, I think it was like episode 2, where like Charlie convinced everybody that he had cancer just so that he could, you know, hit like get pity points from the waitress, the girl he was crushing.
Yeah,
an episode where that's a good example of like that doesn't require anything ridiculous. Like I could see just a truce, you know, I could see somebody doing that.
So you're telling me you could see a group of friends driving in a conversion van, one of them saying he cut the brake lines and then jumping out of the back of the moving van while it's driving.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good. Also, one of my favorite things about Always Sunny is that Charlie is actually married to the waitress in real life, and yet the running gag is that he could never get her.
Right? Yeah.
And then she just like craps all over him, basically.
And then the strain on the relationship.
Yeah, or maybe it was like the running joke from when they met was that she was out of his league or something, right? And so they just played it up for the show. But it's also funny that Mac and Dee are married in real life. I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
That's
just weird thinking about the real life relational dynamics of the cast.
they met on the show though. Like they didn't know her before they casted her. And then I think they started dating in like season two or three, and then they got
Okay.
married a bit later.
Okay. Because they
So
originally had someone else cast as D, right? For
I think
was
I
it just
heard
the
about that.
pilot?
No, Dee was in
Was
the
it the
pilot.
pilot?
Oh crap. Caitlin, what's her last name?
Olson.
Caitlin, yes, thank you. Caitlin Olson was in the pilot.
Okay.
Or the pilot is a great episode. So I could see this happening, right? Because she thinks she's crushing on, or she thinks that she and this other guy are kind of like, will they, won't they? But he's like a bar promoter, so he ends up getting a bunch of people to like patron their bar. But it turns out he's actually gay, and he turns their bar into like the quote hottest gay bar in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then it's like two of the four, main crew are against it. The other two are for it.
So I'm just thinking of other side characters like Artemis and some of the lines, the one-liners that she has.
Oh, man.
Or but okay, so plausibility, like you can relate to the gang literally ruining Rickety Cricket's life, and then Frank getting a role as a semi-pro wrestler and eating garbage.
Well, no, what do you mean semi-pro wrestler? They put the event on. There was no professionalism
It's
involved.
semi-pro. That's why I put the semi in front. I'm the trash man. Okay. Sorry, were you gonna say something?
No, I mean, the only thing I was gonna say is I just recently watched It's Always Sunny, like, I don't know, a few months ago, and I feel like I should have a better idea of some of the later episodes where I'm just like, meh. Like I think when Matt, the episode where Mac did like his dance at the, put his dance on at the prison, that seemed a little I guess like the well, I that was meant to be a dramatic moment, so I think that one gets a pass. But what I was gonna say was like I can't really see Mac in a short period of time. I guess it wasn't actually supposed to be short, but putting on a production like that. Mac is a lot, isn't competent enough to do something like that. The episode where they went, or the episodes where they went to Ireland was kind of felt a little shark jumpy, but that also culminated in a pretty dramatic moment for Charlie. So I think it was a lot of it was set up for that.
Yeah, I haven't seen past, I don't know, season 10 maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. It's the last few seasons I haven't seen, but
Anyway.
anyway, circling around to one of the scheduled topics for today,
Sharks. Just
and jumping it.
sharks.
Speaking of, have you seen commercials for the, what's it called, the Meg 2 with Jason Statham?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Speaking of jumping the shark, it's like the whole movie. I don't understand that, like, genre of, it's not even like B level movies, it's like C or D level. Like
Okay.
Sharknado and VelociPastor, and it's just like
VelociPastor.
who's watching these? Really don't get it. But anyway, okay.
I got to say one question though. Have you ever seen a movie called Black Sheep? Not the Chris Farley, David Spade one.
Oh, I was gonna say yes until you clarified. I don't think so.
Black Sheep, the one I'm talking about, is a movie from New Zealand, set in New Zealand, where these group of people are accosted by a were sheep epidemic.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of those movies where you can't tell if it's a really bad horror movie or if it's really good satire. But there's a few scenes where it's like, okay, this has got to be satire.
Well, that's like Tucker and Dale versus Evil is in my opinion, an immaculately executed horror movie satire,
See,
where
I
it's
would call
like,
that a, isn't that more of a comedy? I wouldn't necessarily classify it as a satire, although it kind of is.
I mean, it's the premise is a horror movie, but everything is orchestrated to deliver laughs. So to me, it's they use the medium of a horror movie, but poke fun at it as they're going. So, I mean, I guess you could call it a comedy, but its method is satire of horror, essentially.
Yeah, it's definitely an overt satire. Like,
Right.
you know, it's spo that it's poking fun at the genre. And
Yes, there's not confusion, but it's executed well and its quality is high, right? It's not like the Meg or, well, okay, the Meg specifically. This is like a theatrical film with Jason Statham, and it, from all appearances, is billed as like an actual action flick, and yet it's so preposterous in its premise.
yeah.
It's like I don't understand.
All our listeners, if you haven't seen the movie Tucker and Dale versus Evil, we definitely recommend it. Very funny.
Yeah. That's one that it's like I don't know what the right word is. I wouldn't say like cult classic, but it's just one that never really had much fanfare. And it was on, I think I found it on Netflix, maybe when I was in college or shortly thereafter. I was like, huh, this looks interesting. I'll check it out. And I was so pleasantly surprised by that movie. I had very low expectations, but it's really good.
If it's any draw, it's to people listening. It's got Alan Tudyk. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Yeah, in it, one of the main characters. He's Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball. He does a lot of voice acting work. I forget the name of the robot, but he was the droid in Rogue One. He was Sonny the robot in I, Robot.
He's also in A Knight's Tale as
Oh yeah.
I can't remember the character's name. Like the squire, basically.
The red-headed one.
Yeah. I'm gonna phone you.
I like that guy as an actor. I love everything he's in.
Who's Steve the Pirate?
The only guy on our team dressed like a pirate. Wait, there's a guy on our team dressed like a pirate?
It's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so dragging us back onto the primary path, there's a question that I mentioned in our last episode that I had come up in my team meeting that week, and we didn't get around to it, and so I'd like to introduce it, which was, and I honestly don't remember how it came up, but the question was asked, is breakfast cereal chowder? Because one of the guys in my group had looked up the definition of chowder and said that it's basically ha like a soup that includes milk or cream. And so we were talking about that a little bit. And then it dawned on me, it was like, wait, does that mean that breakfast cereal is chowder? Because we pour milk on it. And then we kind of debated that back and forth. But I'm curious if you have an initial stance on that.
Well, I think this is a good example of what it means to interpret a law or a definition word for word, as opposed to adhering to more the spirit of the law or definition than the specific wording. Because by the specific wording, yeah, I don't see. I mean, the only thing with the definition that you recalled that the that your coworker looked up is there something about the definition of a soup? Because he said it's a soup that involves milk or cream. So is soup restrictive enough to exclude cereal is the question. But I would venture to say no, because one, it might say something like maybe soup has to be served hot, but there are some soups that are served cold. And if you just don't want to reheat, you know, leftover soup, does that mean it's not soup anymore if it's cold?
Right.
I don't think so.
And there are some cereals served hot, like the stuff.
Oatmeal. or cream of wheat. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you actually would have a pretty decent case, given any definition, that oatmeal or cream of wheat would be considered a chowder if you poured milk on it.
Yeah. I'm trying, because like soup might, somebody might say, well, it's got to have pasta in it. But that's not true. I've seen like Italian wedding soup, I believe, doesn't have any pasta. It has like barley.
Tomato soup.
Bisques. Yeah. A lot of bisques won't have pasta in it.
So I remember we had a conversation a couple of years ago, I think it was at group, about what differentiates a soup from a
stew.
A stew, yes.
Yeah, I remember that, and we discussed that.
And at the time I looked it up, and because I was pretty confident I knew what the difference was, and confirmed that the difference is only in the ratio of, I'll call it, substance to water in the solution. So a stew is basically a soup with less water in it. And I loosely defined it by saying that if your the chunks of whatever material are in the water are like sitting on top of themselves, such that they break the surface of the water, like islands almost, then it would be a stew. Versus if the primary thing is at the surface is just the water.
Broth, yeah.
Yeah, the broth.
Right. So like chicken noodle soup could be defined as chicken noodle stew if you have low enough broth and it's more solid. Like stews, right, you can almost eat with a fork.
Almost. Yeah.
Whereas soups, you really can't. There's not like you're missing out on a lot of the meal if you eat it with a fork. That's not so much the case with stews.
And by that definition, I feel like you could almost put like a macaroni salad or a potato salad in the stew category as well.
Yeah.
Where it's semi-fluid, but not quite, you know.
Yeah, because if you have a pasta salad, you know, I've had pasta salads where the dressing that they have on it, you know, is kind of excess, so it's kind of pooling at the bottom. Is that technically a soup or a stew? I don't see a reason why it couldn't technically be.
And I guess at that point, you could probably call it a chowder, too.
If there's milk or cream.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever had like a sweet macaroni salad where they use like Miracle Whip or something?
Oh, that sounds disgusting. No.
Yes. Yeah, it is. But there's like a small segment of the population that thinks that's the way to make macaroni salad. It's very gross.
Pasta salad's sugary.
Yeah, it's always upsetting because you're like, oh, it looks good, and then you take a bite into it. Oh, it's just this like soupy sweet pasta. Yeah, you can't get rid of that fast enough.
Whenever I think of sweet plus pasta, like when you just described that scenario to me, it like immediately popped in my head the imagery of Will Ferrell in Elf. With the spaghetti scene.
Maple syrup?
Yeah. Oh, that just, like, spaghetti or noodles, like, or pasta and sweet do not go together to me. That just is very unappetizing to think about.
Although I feel like if you were to imagine making, like, a spaghetti, but instead of putting a tomato sauce on it, you just put a little bit of butter and then cinnamon brown sugar. I feel like that wouldn't taste too bad.
I
It'd
think
be
it would
very
be.
outside of our norms. Like, it might just
Yeah.
be weird, but I don't think it would taste bad.
I think it would be okay despite the fact that you're using spaghetti, not because of it. Like, I think it's like as good as you can make that, you could just make cinnamon toast. That's 10 times better.
Yes, that's fair, I think. Part of that has to be the texture, though, because like pasta texture doesn't really match other sweet things that we have.
I would agree with that.
Or it's kind of like a slippery, chewy, I don't know what how to
Dense, it's
describe texture.
kind of denser than bread or something. Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's just a mental association with you normally will eat pasta with savory stuff. And then if you, it's sort of like, you know, it's like, would you like some, actually, maple? I was going to jokingly say, would you like some maple syrup on that steak? But I could see that being pretty good. I know at the
Maple
Minnesota
syrup
State
goes well with.
Fair. Oh yeah, the maple, like, because I was going to say at the Maple State Fair, no, at the Minnesota State Fair, there's a they have like this lumberjack competition area, and right next to there, they have this I forget the name of the food. It's not really a stand. I think it's an actual building. It's been a handful of years since I've been there, but they serve like this battered fried walleye and like this real thick cut bacon, and then they give you this maple dipping sauce. It's not maple syrup, but it's like maple flavored dipping sauce. And that food that I just mentioned is one of the best, I think, one of the best foods at the Minnesota State Fair. And that is saying something. That is a not and that is a high bar.
Yeah, saying a food is top tier at a state fair is nothing to sniff at.
And I think that's because I think I really like it because so much at the state fair, you know, a lot of stuff's just carbs or loaded with sugar, but that's very protein based. And so it really hits the spot. It's definitely got, you know, some sugariness with it, but you have like the real salty, savory with the bacon, and then the maple flavor just complements it so well.
As you were talking, all I could think is that the state fair is like a giant conference or symposium for cheater ingredients.
Pretty much. I mean, they make like fried everything, right? It's like just fry it
Yes.
and it automatically becomes better.
It's either fried, it has cheese or butter in it, it has bacon,
Covered in sugar.
covered in sugar, yeah.
Yeah. It is just a symposium of cheater ingredients, but that's why you go, right? You go because it's just a bunch of food that's horrible for you but tastes good. And then you can say, wow, look at that pig. Like it's so big, or look at that cow.
So we actually went to the state fair this year, which is the first time I've been to the Iowa State Fair in probably almost a decade. And we saw the grand champion boar, which was, I think, just over 1,000 pounds.
That can't be healthy.
Yeah, I mean it's like barely moving, you know. But the I've been around big pigs a good portion of my life. I worked on a hog farm in high school, and I think we had some boars there that were like maybe 600 pounds. But the one that really got me was the grand champion lamb, was like a 400-pound lamb or ram, maybe.
How is it still alive?
It was the size of like a small pony. It was probably 3.5 feet tall at the back and just massive. Like
Like, was it just super fat too, or was it
it
like.
was very thick, yeah. And it was disturbing, I would say. Like, you're used to thinking of sheep as like somewhat small and fluffy and whatever, and this was just all the wrong proportions.
Oh,
Like
that's not okay.
it was getting into like alpaca territory or something, you know, in terms of like body shape.
Weird. That's too
It
bad.
was very weird.
It's a bit abusive.
Yeah, I mean that whole thing with large animals is we do it with everything, right? It's large pumpkins, large corn, squash, biggest poppy flower, like, but yeah.
Well, see, with those, right, like to get the largest pumpkin, you have to tend to it to encourage it to grow on its own. You can't force feed a pumpkin. You can force feed a sheep or a pig, and then you'd say, oh, I got the biggest pig. So, yeah, you just fed it a lot of food and it just got really, really fat. What would really impress me is if you grew like the biggest pig, not because you overfed it, it's just like, wow, the frame of this pig is huge. So yeah, I figured out what to feed it and how to raise it, and it optimizes its growth. And I selectively bred it over the generations. I bred him from abnormally big parents, and whom I bred from abnormally big grandparents. Like that would be more skillful than just here, eat another pound of butter.
Well, so to be fair, everything that you described is happening, right? But it's still you're packing on pounds on a oversized frame. So they've done the selective breeding and all the genetics and et cetera. But it's also then a matter of how much weight can you pack onto that frame, right? It's like if you were to look at an NFL lineman, even if they eat a lot to keep their weight up, but they're still, even if they stopped eating and resumed a normal diet, they're still going to be 6'4" and have shoulders that are 2.5 feet wide. Like they're
Yeah.
big dudes no matter how much weight is on their frame.
Yes, but it's not like I want the best linebacker ever, so I'm going to take somebody who's abnormally big and strong and just force feed him until he can't walk anymore.
Right.
Kind of
Because
defeats
there's
the purpose.
no utility in something that large in a sport, right?
Right.
But yeah, the kind of unfortunate circumstance is that all the utility is in displaying something massive at a state fair. So it doesn't have to be able to move or have a high quality of life. But on the flip side, I do often wonder if you didn't have our higher levels of reason and consciousness. Would it really be low quality of life to have all the food you wanted all the time and just kind of sleep in a pen and whatever? I mean, the
Yeah.
pen part probably would be low, but
You raise a good point.
that's, I think, part of the reason our society is having such challenges with obesity is because we have the food to reach that state. So previously, we didn't have access to the food, but that didn't mean we wouldn't have wanted it if we could have.
Right.
Now we do it because we want to, and we have access to do it.
Yep. Our bodies are still designed to, hold on to excess stores of energy because we might need it later because we used
Right.
to.
Right. Even not even physiologically, just psychologically, right? Like taking leftovers home from a restaurant or whatever is ingrained as, it's more efficient and it's being a good steward of your money or whatever. And, hey, I paid for that. And,
But
but we all,
you're thinking there's a
it,
more fundamental, like, oh, I see food, I better not waste it because survival.
Yeah. I mean, why do people have such a hard time passing up free food, right? It's that even stuff that they wouldn't normally eat or don't necessarily care for, a lot of times people will take it if it's free. Because, like, you never know.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll need it later. And it's just such a good bargain. So you'd be stupid not to take it. So.
Was that part of our topic that we brought in, or is that another tangent?
That was a tangent off of whether or not cereal is
Oh, yeah.
powder. Yeah. So I'm going to make the case that I think I would tend to agree with you that by a common usage definition, no, it's not. With the literal definition, I think you could make a case for it that's not like in, what's the word? In bad faith.
Violation of something?
No, it's like not in bad faith. Like you're making an argument not just to be anal about it, but trying to clarify the intent of the definition. So maybe we need to improve a definition of what a chowder is, but
Or again, I think that maybe the more, rather than defining a chowder, because there was a bit of an asterisk in this conversation, which is a chowder was
Oh, yeah.
defined as a soup that has milk or cream in it. So maybe the question is, maybe we should, or maybe the point is we should be more specific as to what a soup is. Because
And
I really think that's the base of the conundrum. How do you define a soup?
it's possible that the definition of soup is already sufficient, and it's also possible that soup was not mentioned in the definition of the chowder, and I just am misremembering. So
Oh.
there are several scenarios that wouldn't necessarily mean a definition had to be improved. But what I was thinking of is, we talked about oatmeal and other things. I've also was thinking about like regular cold cereals, like if you ever had like Frosted Wheats or
Cap'n Crunch.
Raisin Bran or something like that, where when you let them sit in the milk, they just become sludge. And
Ugh.
then like your whole bowl is this almost gelatinous mass of some sort of a grain in milk with a
I don't
bunch of
think I ever
sugar.
had that problem.
No, you've
I
never
don't
let
think
your
so.
cereal like just sit long enough to soak it all up and dissolve.
No, I guess not.
Definitely done that as a younger person.
I think I always just finished what I had.
I think it was usually like for me Raisin Bran, which I didn't really like, but sometimes I was hungry enough to eat some of it.
Sure.
So I'd like pour a bowl and then eat half of it and be like, okay, I'm not as hungry anymore. And so I've reached the point where I'm no longer willing to eat it. Like my dislike for it has exceeded my hunger. But
I've been pretty stringent on, finishing what I eat. And not stringent like I intentionally do, it's just like an instinctual thing. Like
yeah.
almost like OCD, where it's like I gotta do it. So maybe that's why I've never ran into this problem.
Yeah, I get that. I think that's, I mean, a lot of people have that just from growing up, where parents strongly encourage slash require finishing what the food that you take on your plate, so you're not being wasteful, and that just becomes like your default mode as an adult.
They did not have to persuade me to do it, though. Like, I never
Sure,
had that problem.
yeah.
And, like, when I see a kid that's really super picky about eating, or, like, a kid that doesn't even want to eat dinner, I'm like, what the heck is wrong with you? Like, I'd eat a whole meal right at any point of the day, of any day, if I didn't have self-control. And then
Yeah.
here, it's time to finally eat, and you're turning it down?
Dude,
Like,
it's weird.
I have to control myself from not doing that every hour of the day.
Some kids, I don't know if it's, I think there are genuinely some, I don't know what the term would be, but like preferences or whatever, or dislikes that prevent them from eating certain things. But I also have to wonder, like, how much is parents in some of those instances just what's the word,
I don't
giving
know.
in to their children's pleas, right? And then as soon as you realize you can whine and cry and not eat the food you don't like, then that gets weaponized and multiplies over time. But it does amaze me, some kids, like, their entire diet consists of, like, chicken nuggets, ketchup, and mac and cheese. Like, those are the only things that they'll eat.
They got good taste. I'll give them that. I haven't had mac and cheese for years, and that's because I know how good it is.
Wow.
And
That is a level of self-control.
I know how fattening it is. But a lot of carb-heavy stuff, it's like I will blow up like a balloon if I'm not careful.
See, I don't like regular mac and cheese. But I really like, if you make mac and cheese with like the little shells with white cheese and then like mushrooms and bacon and stuff like that, like you kind of load it up, then I'm all about it.
Mushrooms. Okay.
But it's more of a, I don't know, my favorite style is like a carbonara style, just without peas in it, but pasta with white sauce, bacon, mushrooms, chicken. That's where it's at.
Fancy. Oh, that's right. You don't like peas. I like peas myself. So if we're ever eating in a restaurant or something, you get peas, give them to me. I normally don't. I like peas in stuff. I won't just eat them like, like a side. That just seems weird to me. But
See,
I, you normally like them in food.
I don't like them cooked in any way, whether as a side or in a dish. I will occasionally eat them raw, like just as a fresh vegetable. Those are more palatable to me. So I think it's partly the texture, like mush, that I don't like. But the flavor also becomes earthier, I would say, after they're cooked, which I really do not enjoy.
Don't feed Ben dirt. Noted.
Yeah. Please don't.
Glad I have that written down now.
Yeah, you were really worried if you were going to do that or not, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I've got another topic here that maybe won't take super long, so
Well,
I'll enter.
where real quick, where did we settle on the is cereal chowder question?
I'd give it the benefit of the doubt. I'd include it.
Okay.
I think it's along the lines of, the calling a Pop-Tart a calzone or whatever. Like, I think it falls into that category of somewhat satirical definition stretching,
Which I would
Or
agree.
like calling a raccoon a trash panda kind of thing. I feel like it falls into that category.
Well, the raccoon trash panda thing, like, because I think you can easily make an argument if raccoons are related to pandas or not. Because a panda is like a specific, like, group of species.
Right. Yeah.
And you can just say, is it related to them or not? It isn't. Okay, then it's not a panda. I mean, you could still colloquially call it a trash panda. Sure, I'm not going to say you can't. It's just technically not a panda.
Right,
Unless we
yeah.
wanted to expand the definition of a panda where it's no longer specific to like a certain family or, group of species where it's just like a term, like bird, right?
Right.
Or not even bird, like flying creature. So bats and birds and dragonflies can all be in that category, even
Bird
though they're
bats.
all wholly unrelated to one another. I would say for the chowder question, I stand by what I said earlier, where this is a good example of why we need to interpret the spirit, interpret things by the spirit of their intention, not by just what the original founders wrote down on paper, and that's all we have to go on. That's what we're sticking with, right? This is
So
the danger of that.
it's your belief, or what you're putting forward by saying that is it's your belief that the intended definition of chowder would not include cereal.
Yes, that's correct.
So is it, but I guess what criteria do you feel? I'm trying to think of how do you describe the intent without just getting to the legalism part of it. But
Well, I think
is it
actually
the
the
temperature? Is it the fact that it's not savory? Is it,
Well, I think
or is it like, I don't
you're
know.
still getting into the more like wordiness of the like a chowder, like or a soup in general is like it's generally something where you have it for a meal. It's usually hearty. Cereal is more of like a lighter meal. It's usually sugary or not savory for sure. And I think a good litmus test for this is, would you feel comfortable putting cereal in the soup section of a menu if you were to open a
Ooh.
restaurant?
Ooh.
You know,
This is a
if
question of would Ben do it to subvert norms, or would this actually be a viable business practice?
well, I'm talking about in a general sense where it's like, okay, let's get down to brass tacks. If you wanted to offer both cereal and soup at your restaurant, would you put them under the same, like a section called soups? Because you know what's going to happen? You're going to get customers complaining, like, I can't find your cereal on here. You said there'd be cereal. Say, oh, it's in the soup section. And they're just going to say, well, that's stupid. And you're going to get that consistently to say, okay, I guess they're not. I guess it's that cereals aren't a soup.
So,
Because it's hard to quantify why. It's hard. But that's the truth for a lot of different things in life. And if you want to just try to say, we have to get it down, we have to nail it down in words, this opens up the realm to these weird loophole slash nuances. And this is why there are so many loopholes in the legal system, is because Western society is so fixated on a word for word, we need to have the definition. Here's the definition. Here's a paragraph or a list of bullets or just a one sentence thing. And that's all we have to go on. That's all we have to work with. And judges or lawyers can find little loopholes or technicalities to obey the wording of the law, but not the spirit. And that's where technical loopholes come in and legal loopholes come in. That's what introduces them and what allows them to thrive.
okay, so but there's a flip side to that, which is there is a necessary level of definition to even have agreement on what the quote unquote spirit of the law is. So if you don't have some parameters that include something as a chowder and exclude other things as not chowder, then it literally is you're at the level of definition where I could put any bowl of something, some substance with water in front of any person, and they could say, that's a chowder, or that's not a chowder, because they don't have any criteria to use to make the def to match a definition to an object. So we have to use language descriptively to put things in categories to even have the intent of the spirit of the law to begin with. So it's you can't not have the definition. It's just a question of which one, like, when do you go too far with the definition, and when you're chasing after the, like, oh, but it said this and it's not that and it's this or whatever, right? I think it's like not seeing the forest through the trees. That doesn't mean like you can't have a forest without trees. So you still have to have the trees, but you need to be able to see it collectively as a forest. And
I agree. I agree. I'm not saying get rid of the definition. What I'm saying is don't, like, I think we need to get away from clinging to the definition as it's written down in clause whatever of some document. That's all we have.
sure. So what I would say in this case is that in my mind, to match a definition with the spirit of the definition based on how I interpret it from all the clues I've gathered through conversation and friends and whatever reading, menus, whatever, I would say that differentiating characteristics between a breakfast cereal and a chowder would be twofold. One of them being breakfast cereals, not all, but most are served cold, and most chowders are served hot. And that's not to say you can't eat them cold or hot at your own discretion. But if you were to be served it at a restaurant or hotel or whatever, you're going to get it in that fashion. And then the other piece is that I think all breakfast cereals are sweet and all chowders are savory. Or at least that's their like basic essence, is to be in those categories. But I do think this raises an interesting point, which is actually something I that came up in a podcast I was listening to this past week, which is that whenever you're talking about a definition or an ideal of some kind, there are multiple characteristics that describe that ideal definition state. And what ends up happening is that in reality or in practice, most of the objects in that category do not match all of those characteristics. But the extent to which they match most of the characteristics is what puts them in that category versus another category. And so one of the examples being put forward is, like, if you talk about cats and you say, like, cats have like long tails, that's something that we can identify about cats. Well, if you use long tails as part of your definition, then, like, lynx and bobcats are no longer fit into your cat category. But if you look at all the other attributes of what constitutes a feline, then they do, right? So the point being made was that, and I think this is kind of what you're getting at with the spirit of it, is not every object in a category has to match verbatim every single one of the attributes to be agreed to be in that category.
Slash, maybe the list of attributes that we have written down, that may be incomplete.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, which I think is a good example.
I think is, we kind of reached this point in language where we have a definition that seems to be suitable enough in terms of what's in the dictionary, and then it gains additional context in usage that maybe never gets, like, it's never fed back into a dictionary to capture that additional context, you know?
That's what you mean.
Because Noah Webster had to up and die, you know? Good grief.
Well, somebody could, in theory, you know, take on the torch.
Yeah, it is plausible. It wouldn't be jumping the shark for someone else to take the torch.
Exactly. And it comes full circle.
Full circle. Well, that is interesting because we are now at the 1 hour mark, and the topic that I was going to introduce, we didn't get to because we circled all the way back around the beginning of the tangent, which is totally okay.
Ooh, do you want to give people a preview for what the topic is? Slash, give me a preview because I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. And actually, I might broaden it a little bit now. But this topic came up because it's happened to me several times recently. And I'm trying to find a way to navigate a social or cultural phenomenon. That is at odds with my personal feelings on the issue. And so I'm, to some extent, it could be a lighthearted discussion or satirical, but I'm also trying to figure out what is the right approach here. What's a good way to find a middle ground? And so the specific instance is being in a drive-thru. This happens particularly at coffee shops, but it could be anywhere. And you get to the window, and the person at the cashier at the register tells you that someone in front of you paid for whatever it was that you just purchased. And thus you find yourself in a pay it forward cycle. And what I'll say for today is that I do not like being in those situations. I'll unpack that a lot more in the future conversation. But so that's the topic to be thinking about, is how do you navigate a pay it forward cycle?
Extricate yourself?
How do you extricate yourself? Yeah. What is the best way to do that? Because you can participate, you can just completely ignore it. But I think there's got to be, like, options C, D, E. I don't know what other paths to take, but we can talk through that. The other thing that's is related to, like, interactions with small businesses, and this is more of just an observation, but it was on my mind today, so I'm going to mention it, is I've noticed this trend of when I go into a small business, like a retail shop specifically, And I first noticed this when Sarah and I were in Denver in at the end of May and early June. I'd never heard this phrase before, but then walking into retail shops, it was like multiple in a row, they said, "Welcome in." Those two words, "welcome in," very distinctly. And I was like, "What?" The first time I heard it, I was like, "Oh, that's kind of interesting." And then it was like every store, completely unrelated stores, were saying this. And then again, I hadn't heard it before that trip. And now, back in Iowa, several months later, I've heard it pop up at some stores in Iowa where I'd never heard it in Iowa before. To the point where earlier this afternoon, I was actually reading up on online, and there are other people on like Reddit and other places asking the same question of like, where did this phrase come from and why is it gaining popularity? And I found posts going all the way back to like 2018, but those were in places like Portland and New York City. So I'm gaining the sense that this phrase somehow originated on our coasts and then has taken, 4 or 5 years to creep into the center of the country. But it feels weirdly like there's some sort of small business association training or like memo going around that that's the most effective way to greet customers. And so everybody's now saying welcome in instead of whatever they used to say.
It's the cabal of small business owners.
Yes, dark money.
That's interesting. Welcome in. I'll have to keep an ear out for it now. I have not noticed that myself, but I also haven't been listening for it. Because
Yeah,
welcome in seems more like, I mean, it makes sense. I normally hear that maybe in the context of you're coming over to somebody's house or something. They say, oh, welcome in, come on in and make yourself at home.
Yeah, and I've heard variations of hello, welcome, come on in, whatever. And then
Yeah.
this is like one of those weird, it's like a Brian Regan sort of moment where you started to say welcome and then you change your mind and decide to say come on in. And so you just said welcome in instead, But
Have
actually,
I?
one of,
Go, go, go. I was going to say I have an in a funny story about that sort of thing happening. Actually, I have two, but one
yeah,
of them is not.
I think you told me one of them in the past, but yeah, one of the people online was theorizing that it's a result, they argued it was somewhat an inherent result of the Germanic origin of English, and they pointed to Willkommen being the German phrase for
Yeah.
welcome, which is like the same as welcome in. It
Well,
sounds the same.
Willkommen is one word.
Right. Yes. But so they're essentially arguing that English is evolving along a Germanic path to say welcome in. And I don't know if it would ever become one word, but that's kind of the direction they were alluding. Anyway, you had a story.
Yeah, so this didn't happen to me. It's happened to a friend of mine, and it's short. He was leaving a restaurant, and he saw someone walking in. So he held the door open for them, and this person came through and said, "Oh, thank you." And he meant to say, "No problem," and "Yep," at the same time. So what came out was, "Oh, thank you." Nope.
I actually had this exact scenario play out this past week for me. I can't remember where I was. I was ordering food and I was at the register, and the person who was taking my order said, what they actually said was, "How are you going to pay?" And what I thought they said was like, "How was your day?" or something like that. Or, and so I was like, "Oh, I'm good, thanks." And then she just stared at me for a second. And then my brain kind of like replayed what I had heard. And it was like, "Oh, that's not what she says." And then I explained what I thought I had heard and then actually answered the question. It's like, "Oh, I'm paying with a card. Sorry."
Yikes.
But it was a super awkward and then funny moment. Well, I think this is a good pause. We've teased the next topic. And again, we have a handful of people that we are working to get into our queue with guest slots. So hoping to have them join us here the next few sessions. And if you would like to join us, or you have a topic idea or any feedback at all, you can just use that Google form in the description. Fill it out and give us a little bit of information. And then we'll follow up with you on either the feedback or your desire to be a guest. So with that said, we will talk to you next time. Take care.